I see. How are you? How's that at the song?
I'm great.
Huh? I'm sorry. I thought I made enough. So people are going to have to share a little bit. Yes, it's just a continuation. I just mean.
Email it to me.
Yes, I'll email it to you.
I will.
Okay. Yes, okay. I'll make copies. Okay. First of all, good evening, everybody. I'm sorry for last week. Thank you very much. Thank you. He knows your father extremely well, the Helmreichs.
Of course.
Yes, they love your father. They live across the street from you. Yes. Sure,
yes.
So the Helmreich.
Okay.
Top it. Yes. Okay, fine. First of all, thank you. I'm so sorry for last 2 weeks ago. My son, Baruch Hashem, became a chosen, and then the next one we tried to do, and then somebody else passed away.
We
took
and
advice.
So we just waited, and the fact is, we would wait again.
I'm sorry. So I'm so sorry, but we'll have a makeup class, hopefully, later. We'll have a makeup class. And if then, I'm sorry if also there are not enough copies, so if you could share with each other. Okay. So let's go first what we spoke the last time, okay? We are talking about the concept of mitzvah sayichud. There is a mitzvah to believe the unity of Hashem. And what we saw last week to summarize is the following. Unity of Hashem is not monotheism. Monotheism means that there is one God. The fact that there is one God and not many gods, that's not a part of the game. Now, the Rambam holds that the idea of the unity of God, Ichud Hashem, means the God is not something that you can count. It's a unity which is indivisible, right? It's something which means that he precludes that he doesn't have a body, he doesn't have a physical. He tries, in other words, the mitzvah, the Rambam learns that it comes to take away or to deny anthropomorphism. Anthropomorphism, the Rambam, my mother, this is a very against giving God a human or a body, a human form. And the Rambam also always needs to find a mitzvah from that. How do we know that God doesn't have a body? Even though many psukim do sound like God has a body. So the Rambam wants to say that that's unity. The unity of God is indivisible, means he doesn't have a body. Unity means it's a unity that cannot be divisible. Reb Tzadok says this idea that God does it not on anthropomorphism. The Rambam himself quotes other psukim, kiloratim tumuna, meaning, do you need a special pasuk that we repeat every day, twice a day, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, to tell you that God doesn't have a body, doesn't have a form? So he argues, and he brings the Baalei Kabbalah. The Baalei Kabbalah trying to say the following, that what Ichud Hashem means, it's something called monism. Monism is that there is a world and there's a creation, but it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a union between us and Hashem. It's not that there is a separateness, there is Hashem and us. Unity of Hashem means that Hashem is everything. He's everywhere. And to understand how is it possible that Hashem is everything, this is the concept of the unity of Hashem which Kabbalah comes to explain. And this is where we're right now holding by. And this is called monism. Monism is the idea that God is everything. He's everywhere, and he's everything. He's the only existence. Everything else just doesn't exist. We are a constructed reality. We are not a real reality, but just a constructed reality. How can you understand this? How can we appreciate this? Now, that's where we're starting. Now, we are starting from in the middle of the page. This one is the opposite here. Ve'al is the page. 1 second. Ve'al bir is the page that starts with the word shezehu. Okay, because a few of them were done right. Shezehu. And it's the second to the last, the third to the last paragraph. Ve'al bir inyan mitzvah zu. Okay. Now, we're going to start. This idea of the unity of Hashem, there is another mitzvah. And the Pasuk says this idea clearly. You have to know today, and you have to make it settle in your heart. Ki Hashem Elokim, the God is the Elokim, Meshamayim imal v'alaretz mitachat, the heavens above and the earth below, ain od. There is nothing else. Doesn't say ain acher. Doesn't say that God is the only one, there is another one. Ain od, there is nothing else. God is the only existence. You've got to realize that there is no other existence. The infinity of God is what we're going to see. It's called the Aleph Not. There is such a thing as called the infinity. If in the mathematics, that is the infinity, it's ineffable. Hashem is the only existence. There's nothing else. The Rambam lo mana mitzvah zesem yuchedet. The Rambam never counts as a separate mitzvah. Yire de sov shezeo safate mitzvata evnata lukut echut. This is what belief Hashem is, that He's the only thing, there is nothing else. In other words, that doesn't add anything. It's not a new mitzvah. It's just a further understanding of what God is. V'Rabbeinu Yonah, but now pay attention. V'Rabbeinu Yonah b'shari tshuva kosov, sheze mitzvah sese. What is the mitzvah? Li'itbonen b'gdulato itbarach. To contemplate, to meditate in the greatness of Hashem. V'yadata means you have to know. The word yediya in Hebrew has a double meaning. It means knowledge, but also means union. Right? Ha'adam yoda et chavayishto vayeda Elokim. Right? Yedat is the concept of union, to connect. You see, in Hebrew, words have opposite meanings. So the word dat means connection, unity, and it also means separation. The Yerushalmi, we say havdalah in chonen adat, because the main dat havdalah minayin. So dat is the one that allows you to connect the real unity and to separate. So v'yadata hayom, says Rabbi Yoina, is not to know that Hashem is the only thing, is to actually contemplate, to meditate. How God is the only existence. There is nothing else but Him. Ubechovat alvavot, katav sheze tzivuy al chovat ayun. Chovat alvavot argues. And Chovat alvavot says that that mitzvah means hayun b'munat eichud al derech hayun asechel. The idea of ve'adata hayom is knowledge. You've got to rationally understand the unity of Hashem. Lo be'munah shmait bilvad. That you don't just go to trust that God is one. You have to actually prove that God is one. This is the idea. The Chovat alvavot is the one that believes that our faith is based on proof. That you have to find all kinds of signs of how this is right. Says the Rapsodak explains it. Divrei shnei chachamim eilu b'tzofam yechad emet. But the answer is that both of them together are truth. Either one separately is not truth. Lo kmo shechava sheval chavot sheyunu hachakira. Don't ever think that the way to belief is built on proofs and on analysis and rationally trying to understand how God is one and philosophically proving it. Leochiach miderech sechel philosophia bitut elokut bitut echudot sheyuchal lechol gam ne'amim b'zulat tzivui haTorah. Not that you have to go philosophically to understand why God is one and try to prove philosophically Pascal's theory and all kinds of philosophical theories why God is one. That's not the mitzvah. Ve'vaday lo tzorach miderech Torah. That's, you don't need this. Why do you have the mitzvahs? If you have to go ahead and to try to some to find some philosophical proofs to the Torah, so then you don't have a mitzvah. The mitzvah is something totally different. And I'll tell you, personally, all these proofs, to try to prove, and that's what you've been saying, I've said last time, this idea to rationally, philosophically prove the existence of God, it's a failed experiment. And the reason is very simple, because Karl Popper always says, every proof, you have to have, in other words, every proof, it's only contingency truth. It's only truth until you can disprove it. If you have some kind of a proof, or some kind of a evidence, scientific evidence, unless it's a mathematical evidence, but if it's a scientific evidence, you have to be ready to give up if you're disproven. So everything else is only proven until disproven. It's the theory that Karl Popper calls the theory of falsifiability. So in other words, and by the way, as I spoke last time, the Supreme Court in the U.S. adopted this theory. It says that any scientific proof has to be something that you're ready to give up if you're disproven. Okay, if you say X, Y, and Z is my proof, if somebody comes up and is able to falsify your theory, you have to give up. Be ready to give it up. And the answer is, you create all these philosophical proofs, and you're not ready to give up, they're not proofs. So says the Tzaddik, to go and rationally, philosophically prove the existence of God is a something that doesn't make sense. There should be a mitzvah to do this. Because number one, is very unconvincing and is never absolute. And this is where Kabbalah changes the game. And that's what it's going to say. V'chol emunat Yisrael b'shat matan Torah. You should know the faith of the Jews in the time of the Torah. Mechuna b'chol makom b'katub b'lashon re'ah. It's always mentioned as a way of vision. We experience God. We don't know His existence. We experienced His existence. God's, the understanding and the belief of God is not a rational proof. It's not a rational philosophical analysis. It's a mystical experience. We experience God. And that's well described as a vision. Shayuroim amitut be'in ha-sechel. They were able to experience, to see through their knowledge, which is called experience, kiryat ha-nevim, like the prophets saw. Matan Torah is not that they saw an evidence, a historical moment. It was a mystical moment. It was an experience of God. So the idea is that you actually get to experience. And this is how the Chovot HaLevavot fits with Rabbi Yonah. You've got to see and experience, and the experience has to come through knowledge. Right, just experience, you could take drugs and experience things, right? Meaning there are many ways out to experience. And by the way, forgot to bring, but there are so many books that you could actually measure experience, right? If today we have enough MRIs, and we have enough EEGs that we can measure how the brain reacts to experience. So we're going to see that this is the experience that comes through knowledge. And that's what Tzaddik says. וכדרך שאיסה במחילתא ראתה שפחה בים. We know that by Kriyas Yamsu, so the sea split, a slave was able to see what Yecheskel didn't see. What did Yecheskel see? Yecheskel saw God's chariot. וראיית יחזקאל היא מעשה ברכבה. He saw מעשה ברכבה. And מעשה ברכבה הוא כבר מפורסם אצל כל ישראל וחז"ל כל קדושים מחמת את ענייני מעשה ברכבה מהם. Everybody knows that Merkava is a mystical experience. So you see that when the slave, when a maiden saw at Kriyat Yam Suf, she saw Kriyat Yam Suf, she saw God, the same way Yecheskel saw God. What did Yecheskel see? He saw the chariot. And the divine chariot, as you're going to see, is not seeing something, is experiencing. It's called the mystical experience. ואין צורך להשיב כאן דברים פרסים וכתבדים, פירוש מעשה מרכבה, גם כי מסוג את חקירות הפילוסופיה וחומת הטבע של אחר הטבע. And he says, don't Rambam, my mind in this calls, מעשה מרכבה and מעשה בראשית. מעשה בראשית, he holds his science and מעשה, because let's go back. The Talmud has mystical ideas are mentioned in one place in Shas and is mentioned as a topic, is the Mishnah in Chagigah. And Chagigah says, there is such a thing called Maseh Merkava and Maseh Bereshit. There is the description, the action, or the story of creation, and the story or the description of the godly chariot. Kabbalah, if you look at the concept of Kabbalah, of mystical teachings, are those two, called Maseh Bereshit and Maseh Merkava. The Rambam writes in the Sodei Torah, the Maseh Bereishis is science. You could get to know God through science. And what is Maseh Merkava? Is metaphysics, which means that's the philosophical metaphysics. And the Kabbalists came to go against that and say that Maseh Bereishit is not science and Maseh Merkava is not metaphysics. And explains the Reb Tzaddik, how do I know that the Rambam was wrong? He says like this. Ve'in tzarich la'ashiv kana divrei ha'mitpalsim ha'kadmonim. You don't have to go and go against early philosophers, means the Rambam. Be'firush ma'aseh merkava gam ki be'asagat chakirot philosophy. That he holds as metaphysics. Ma'aseh merkava is metaphysics. Be'chuchmat ha'teva v'shleach ha'teva. Did you try to look at metaphysics? She'kvar tamu alem chachmei ha'dorot. Everybody argued with the Rambam. said, what you can tell me that Maaseh Merkava, that we're going to see that this is the highest form of learning. Of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, when we wanted to describe his learning, the highest form of learning is the description of the chariot. Everything else is very easy. The only difficult topic that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai learned is Maaseh Merkava. I'm going to tell me that's the philosophy of metaphysics. Doesn't make any sense. Tim kvar nigru lekatnei umot ha'olam mistaklim b'sifrei chachamim yoter ma shenikle lechachmei legdolei hanevim b'ramazim v'chidot. Because if that is the case, all the philosophers, the Greek philosophers, knew about Maaseh Merkava more than we know. And that doesn't make any sense. Yes. Yes. Now, yes, but he's, because you're going to see what you're saying is a very good point, because Plato is mystical. We're going to soon see, but what the Rambam is trying to say, take away from philosophy, because you see that our mysticism is very different than the Rambam's mysticism. What Kabbalah, what we know at Kabbalah, what called the mystical tradition is very different, because the Rambam is taking philosophy as a mystical experience, which is very Platonic. That the Rambam does that. Rambam was, we know, a student of Plato. But so he says no. Because otherwise, Plato knows Kabbalah better than we do. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, this is, so what's uniquely Jewish about us? That Maaseh Merkava is the highest form of learning, is Plato. So says, so that's not it. Now you don't have to argue this. And he says, why? Because Kabbalah in the time of the Rambam was not known. The great works of Kabbalah was not known at that time. But now it is. So let me explain to you what happens, right? In the world of Kabbalah, there were two major schools that we have. We have the earliest schools, were the schools of Rabbi Shmuel, and they are mystical ascensions. We're going to talk about it. Those are called mystical experiences. The people did this meditation, and through meditative practices, they went above and they detached themselves. However, there was another school, which is the Zoharic school, which is the Zohar, which comes from the school of Rabbi Akiva. There were two schools in the time of the destruction of the temple. One of them is the school of Rabbi Shmuel, and the other one is the school of Rabbi Akiva. The school of Rabbi Shmuel, he did a book called The Palaces. It's called Deichalot. And Deichalot tells you all meditative practices, and they are truly only meditative. But there was another work from the tradition of the school of Rabbi Akiva, which is called the Zohar. And that tradition was kept, at least our tradition, and we'll talk about it, was kept in secret and was only revealed in the 13th century. So the Rambam, Tosfot, they didn't have that. So the reason why the Rambam had to go and explain Maaseh Merkava to be metaphysics of Plato is because he didn't have any other tradition. But the people, now that the Zohar became revealed and it became a lingua franca, and we're going to soon see how that happened, we have a much better way to explain what Maaseh Merkava is all about. So when the Gemara says the Maaseh Merkava, you don't teach anybody unless the person can learn on his own. Very funny. How do you teach somebody if he only can teach him if he can learn on his own? So what's the purpose of teaching? This is what the work is going to explain. But that Maaseh Merkava, Rav Tzadok says, once you have the Zohar becomes clear that this is what Maaseh Merkava is all about. Now, who was the greatest in Maaseh Merkava? Is it Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus? Right? For the Gemara, Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, one of the Talmidim of the rabbis of Rabbi Akiva, and is very much Zoharic traditions. Meaning, if you look at Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar and the Zohar, they are very consistent. And the ideas of the Zohar and of Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar are very consistent. Now, the Zohar became, and I'm going to just summarize this idea, the Zohar became revealed. The story of the Zohar is that there was somebody called Moshe de Leon in Spain, who came up with a manuscript that he thought that he came to teach people that this is the Zohar. And the Zohar was a midrash, a mystical midrash of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. The tradition was that he wrote it while he was in the cave running away from the Romans. Now, there were always rumors that such a midrash existed, but we did not know about them. The Rambam doesn't know about them. Many times Tosfot, if you look in the Gemara, Tosfot asks a question and gives an answer, and Rabbi Akiva Eiger will say on the side, this is in the Zohar. Now, why did Tosfot didn't quote the Zohar? Because Tosfot couldn't hold, because he didn't have the Zohar at this time. So when that book came about, Rabbi Moshe Dilyon gives this, and this was a revolution in the world. And as we spoke the last time, and I'm just going to summarize, if anybody wants to hear the whole story about it, you could listen on the tape. What happened was, when the book came about, so first of all, that story of the book is written by the Yuchsin. Yuchsin is a book, a history book of the 15th century, written by Rabbi Avraham Zakut. Avraham Zakut was a great scientist and a great historian. Okay, the Lusiadas, the famous poem on the discovery of Brazil and Brazilian, is credited, if you look at it, is crediting Rabbi Avraham Zakut. He was the inventor of the latitude. Okay, but it doesn't matter. He was a great person, and he writes the story. So it tells the following story, that when the Zohar comes about, they sent the Kabbalists, there were Kabbalists before from the other schools, to see and check the Zohar. And they came to check the Zohar, was Rabbi Yitzchok de Minako, he comes to check the Zohar, and by the time he comes to the Zohar, Moshe Dilyon had passed away, and the book says that he was trying to find the manuscript, and the manuscript was never given to him. And the story stops there. So the book never tells you if the Zohar was endorsed by the Kabbalists at that time or not. But Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, which was a great book critic, he's the one who wrote the criticism in the Zohar. He says it's very clear from the people at that time that they accepted, all the Kabbalists accepted the Zohar to be a true tradition. And the biggest raya is Rabbi Nubachi. Rabbi Nubachi in the Chumash, right, that we have Rabbi Nubachi, was at that time, he was a Talmud, and he quotes the Zohar as the Medrash of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, as if it was the Zohar Poshut. So even though it was, and the reason is, what's the tradition? The tradition is, I'll tell you how, the simple idea was that the Zohar was an oral tradition, like all the oral traditions that we have, that was kept in the school of Kabbalists, and they decided, for some reason, and we're going to see why, to actually publicize the book at the time of Moshe Dilyon. So Moshe Dilyon publicized the book that was an oral tradition that was kept for 1,000 years on the Zohar. But once the Zohar became revealed, it was the book that sold itself. And we're going to see that the Zohar becomes the real Zohar, the shining of the Zohar, is not when the Zohar gets published in the first time, but when the Ari in the 16th century, which tonight, which is so interesting, tonight is the Yortzot of the Arizal. Hey Av is the Yortzot of the Arizal. And the Arizal was the one who made the Zohar. We're going to soon see, we're going to go into the history because it's an amazing history what happened that made the Zohar, that people just saw it, and the truth speaks for itself. And this is what Rav Tzadok is going to say. You realize something, Rabbi Isai. Truth, if you need to prove something, you already lost the battle. You know why? Because to prove, I can prove this and I can prove that. Truth is something that speaks for itself, and it just dawns on you. It's experiential. You know that something is truth, not because somebody proves. You feel with every bone of your existence. Is the Honda the car that sells itself? No. We're going to see that Emuna, and I'm going to tell you something. Emuna is the belief. And belief is a belief, right? Belief is that you tell yourself that you believe. That's Emuna. Experience is the next step, that you get to actually feel it. Experience it. And this, we're going to teach you how to do it. This is experiencing. Experiencing Emuna. Tzadik b'emunato. Tzadik in his Emuna, what does he do? Yechiyah, he'll live. You live it. Experience. I studied at Columbia. The great scholar of experience is William Proudfoot. Experience, you're going to see what it is. Experience is that you don't believe. You live it. You do. And this is what we're going to talk about it here. And this is, by the way, this is, I told you, we are trying to bring this into a practical terms to make our lives better. And we're not trying to make people meditate and start going crazy. But you could actually bring this to a level of experience that makes your life better. The reason why Buddhism is so attractive is because it talks about the experience of the unity. Right? Because they talk about experience. Experience is something much stronger. It's not feelings. It's not faith. So that's why the Pasuk says, V'tzadik b'munato ichye. No. That's okay. They don't. They realize something. The Buddha is something so. The Pali writings are something totally different. It is the experience. It's the bodhisattva. It's the experience. In other words, it only has the power when you experience. And Yiddishkeit does it in a much better way. And you see it. The Tzaddik is going to tell you that that's what Kabbalah is all about. V'tzadik b'munato ichye. He lives with faith. You have to live it. If you just believe it, it's nice. The Emunah Pshuta is also good. It's fine. So the Emunah Pshuta is good. And if you want to prove in God and you want to become a philosopher and you have some philosophical truth, or you want to prove because 600,000 people saw and all this kind of stuff, it's fine. No, but I can tell you something. And you'll see that there is a difference because those experiences are truth. There is a difference between our experience and their experience, and we're going to talk about it, right? We're going to talk that to Jacob Katz. Meaning, what's the difference? Because they are not lying. They're also experiencing. We've seen this. We can't say that they are wrong. They are not. But you see that our level of experience is a different one. That's why, by the way, Rabbeinu Bechaye, if you look at the Hakdama Dechoev Salvoves, he spoke to the Muslim mystics, right? They're called the Sufis. The Sufis also experience, and they exchange ideas. So the Kabbalists always exchange ideas. We have a different level of experience, but it's all in the realm of experience. That's why all the Kabbalists always spoke with the other mystics. About William James, right? The universal mystical experience. And it's so true that you have one of the biggest proofs that this is so true, that people's experience and description of those experiences, because the description is very interesting, is similar if you talk to a guy in India, to us. And you see the difference. The Tzaddik is going to say what's uniquely about us. But that's it. That's the world of experience. That is what Kabbalah is all about. The realm of Kabbalah is experience, which is not knowledge, it's not faith, it's experience. Yes. It's so amazing, and the truth. By the way, and I'm not going to digress because we're going to get into it. William James, right? William James is the one who says there is a universal experience that if you go to mystics everywhere, they're going to all agree to the same thing because they're all experiencing the same. Jacob Katz says, but that's not true, because you could see a mystic, let's say a Sufi mystic is going to see Muhammad and is going to see the mirage, and the Jewish guy is going to see Moshe. I always say, do you ever see the near-death experience? Because I love this near-death experience. Do you ever see a Jewish guy who comes back and he says, you know something, I just saw Muhammad and I'm becoming Muslim. He always gets reinforced his ideas. He sees what he wants to see. Right? So Jacob Katz. So let me tell you how it is. The idea is that those experiences, and we're going to get, you need to create forms, very much Platonic. You need to create forms to those experiences. The forms are how you define. Those are the definitions that you have. So people who experience the same thing, but they'll give a form, they will go ahead and describe. They will be able to frame it in the framework that they have. You create the framework, and those experiences animate the framework. So therefore, you are preconditioned to experience a certain way. It's like when you go ahead and you have a big light, and you have to have some kind of glasses. So the glasses create a mediation. We are going to see, and let's get that. But that's step by step. So says Vajrakot, says Reb Tzaddik, the only reason the Rambam goes into metaphysics is because he didn't have the Zohar. The Zohar was a book that sold on its own, meaning it was the book that carried on its own weight. Had he seen it, he realized that this is a much greater way of explaining Maaseh Merkava. Vein tzorech al chibzer kasher muskan b'fi kol chachm yisoh miti v'chol ha-kofer bo v'chlal apikorsim. And anybody who doubts the Zohar and Kabbalah is b'chlal apikorsim, because you realize the Zohar, till today, some people accepted it, some people didn't accept it. Because the Zohar has a lot of something called in good English anachronism. Right? Because number one, it talks about if Rav Shimon ben Yochai wrote, how is it possible that he sometimes, first of all, he uses, not always, but sometimes the Aramaic is a made-up Aramaic that they didn't speak at that time. The few words, I'll tell you, Rav Yaakov Emdin was a great critic. So he writes and he says, the Zohar asks a famous question. He asks, why is a big Knesset called Esh Noiga? And he says, because Esh Noiga Lo Soviv, there is a whole Kabbalistic discussion on that. So Rabbi Yaakov Emdin says, one second, you tell me that a shul is called Esh Noiga? There's no such a thing. I looked in every medrash and every single thing, there's no such a thing that the kudah is Esh Noiga. You're right, a synagogue in Spanish is called Esnog. So that's it. You're asking in Spanish why he called the shul Esnoga? Made of Shuman Yechai in Spanish? Doesn't make any sense. So this is the first one. That's a famous one Rabbi Yaakov Emdin says. And Rabbi Yaakov Emdin says what he says. But let me tell you how at least I understand it. And I, truth is, I did speak to a few people to check it. Rabbi Shafin and Rabbi Shapira. And I think that this is clear. Is that the Zohar was transmitted in two forms like the Gemara. That's my dissertation. Okay, but there's two forms. There is one which is the core and is memorized verbatim. Right? It's repeated verbatim. In the Gemara also we have, and you see that. And then there is a part which are explanations, and it's a fluid explanation. And people use their own language, and it evolved. The Gemara, if you look at the Gemara changes language, right? There is a lot of it which is anonymous in Aramaic, using certain God's words. And then there are things which are in Hebrew, and they are attributed, and they're very clear. So it's like today, there is a tribe in Indonesia who is actually an oral tribe. It's called the Wana tribe. We're not going to say that we are like the Wana tribe is a tribe in Indonesia. But it's interesting, you see, because they have a oral performance, because they're still oral. And what they have is they have a few people who memorize a few words very clear. And then there is a debate. And there was people leading to a debate to explain what does it really mean, and et cetera, et cetera. The Zohar was like that also. Like all Torah Shebaal Peh was this way. There was a part of it which was verbatim, and a part of it which was fluid. Discussion. And therefore the Zohar has late language, because that language is the idea that evolved, and people explained. That's why the topography of the Zohar, if you're going to go ahead and follow the Zohar in Eretz Yisrael, you're going to fall into Vadi, because it doesn't. It's much more of a Spanish topography than it is a Galilean topography. Because those Kabbalists were using their own language to explain the concept. So that's it. And that's, Chassam Sofer says this, Shlomo Fischer says the same idea, Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, that's the idea. So therefore, but says the Rav Tzadok, so if you today don't believe in the Zohar because of all these things, like Gershon Scholem says that Kabbalah is a much later thing, it's a Spanish invention, you're not a Maimin. The Emunah is that we believe that these are real teachings, those are ancient teachings that came to the world through Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and that's why it's called Kabbalah, it's a tradition. Those are traditions and visions. And those ideas, as you're going to see, this is what Kabbalah is all about. And how do you know that that's true? It sells on its own. It's so powerful that you just realize that's not made up. But that's our tradition. So our tradition is that the Zohar was an oral tradition that came about through the generations until Rav Moshe Dilyon, and he decided to write it. And the Zohar was composed in two parts. One Zohar is called the core of the Zohar. And the core of the Zohar is the Zohar that was transmitted verbatim from Shimon ben Yochai. And that Zohar says Chassam Sofer is a very small book. And then there are the explanations, which are all ancient traditions, but was much more fluid because of it. And they used language, and the language was not fixed. And this is how it evolved. So therefore you see strata and you see stuff like that. Yes?
So how is it possible that if it emanates from Shimon bar Yochai, for the Rambam and all the other Rishonim then to be completely not... I mean, I understand that the Arizal is credited with popularizing it later, and that
The Palatos did not know. So the answer is very simple. It's because there was always the Kabbalah. This is Reb Tzadok. Reb Tzadok is going to explain. I don't want to put the horse before the chariot. But what the Reb Tzadok is going to explain, that this Kabbalah is called the secrets of the Torah. Now, it's not a secret because you have to keep it secret. And there were secret societies. The reason it's secret is because you can't understand on your own. You've got to experience. It is a special work to get to understand it. And not everybody was ready to do it. Reb Tzadok is going to say something beautiful. The Pasuk says, V'yadata, you should know when, Hayom. Why does it say Hayom? No mitzvah says Hayom. He says, because Kabbalah was experienced that day. When they had Matan Torah, they had the mystical experience. But this is not something that you could always have it. Only certain number of people that they had to go through preparation, there were schools. So they kept it in those schools. And they, as you see, specifically wanted to take away from people from getting involved. One example. Let me give an example. There is one. At the time of the Rashba, which was the one of Rishonim, there was a big Kabbalist called Rav Avrom Abulafia. Rav Avrom Abulafia is one of the pillars of meditative, experiential Kabbalah. He wrote his Sefer in circles, right? Because that's meditative. You have to turn the Sefer. I'm going to bring it. It's very interesting because you have to read it. You get into trance, meaning it's hypnotic. Because you have to roll it. It can't read it. So you go into hypnotic trance. And so what happens? The Rashba at that time insulted this Rav Avrom Abulafia in every word of insult possible. He's an Amoritz. He's a Rosha. He's an idiot. Okay. He put him into the worst color possible. To the extent that his books were never printed. Never printed. Because the Rashba gave all the curses on people who printed it. Chido in the 19th century tells you that Reb Chaim Vital in Shari Kedusha, which is Shari V, on the fourth gate of Shari Kedusha, that was also hidden, right? The Talmud of the Arizal has a Kabbalah meditated. That's the Shar Dalet, is the meditative practices, is word for Reb Avrom Abulafia. So he says, even though the Rashba says, Dari accepted it. And today, all the Kabbalists printed it. It's available. You could even get on the web, the book, and it's printed in circles. It's not in colors, but it's in circles. And it's printed it. Why? Because...
It was available.
They didn't want people to do it. So that's why they went ahead and they... Actually, this is not for the Hamonah. Was not something... Because it's called the sod, meaning you realize that Ma'aseh Merkava, very few people, and the Pasuk could explain. That's why the Pasuk says, Hayom. And you see the Kabbalah is a gradation. We're going to see that this is a gradation. This idea of experience is not something that comes in 1 minute. You're going to get in steps. So that's the idea. But that's why the Zohar was secret. But if you understand the Zohar, even today the scholars, right? Gershon Scholem was the one who says Zohar is much later, Moshe de Leon. Today the other scholars, even Wolfson, will tell you, yes, but those ideas are the ideas from before. Clearly, these ideas were there before. And the question is the transmission of the ideas. So the validity of Kabbalah, says Reb Tzadok, is something which is inherent by us. Yes? Reb Tzadok, by the way, you missed last week. I brought, if you're interested, I have the original now they collect books, right? So I have the original book of Reb Tzadok. You remember? So he agrees with the Zohar. He says, Mefirush, the Zohar is true. He said, there are ideas with the Zohar, which are later. People added. But he says, Kedavar Pashut Blicholek, meaning it's clearly that's true. He only says there are many parts of the Zohar which were added later. Which I just told you, is the same idea. And Reb Shlomo Fischer says that. They are later parts of the Zohar. So the Zohar was one core, and if you know the oral, you know how the oral term is. It's basically like a snowball. It's called a hierarchical structure. Hierarchical structure is that anything which is very simple becomes more and more complex as the time goes. So it's a snowball. So they transmitted. There was the Zohar, which is verbal, which is verbatim, and that was transmitted by people. By the way, let me just go for a second. If you want to go into the theories of transmission, when you transmit, and Shaul Lieberman used to say, when in the yeshiva, and by the way, I can prove to you that everywhere, there were two roles in the yeshiva. There was one role of the guy who was the human tape recorder, and he memorized this thing. It's called the Tana. And you know what the criteria for the Tana was? We always think the guy had to get a very good head. Just the opposite. Gemara says, Tana, Tana, v'loyidad mekomer. You got somebody who was very dumb. Because somebody who's very smart is going to try to temper the text. He doesn't like it. He's going to change. So you get the guy who's very dumb. So the Gemara says, Tani, Tani, v'loyad mekomer. The guy is saying, and he doesn't know what he's saying. Huh? Because he memorized. By the way, no, it's not. But can I tell you something very interesting? There is somebody who just came. You know Israel Diamond? His son-in-law, Daniel Edelstein, just showed me last night. If you look at Mishnayos, if you are able to map out the Mishnayos, you realize that it's almost like a libretto of a play. The reason why they memorize it is because they're mnemonics. There are many ways to remember. They remember because the sounds sound the same. By the way, we know the Lord and Perry and Lord did the same thing by the Odyssey, right? The Odyssey, we know the Homer's works were also memorized by people who didn't understand it, but it's the rhyme. So they had this kind of they were human tape recorders. But then there was another function of the yeshiva called the Savora, the one who explained. And he explained, he says, okay, what does that mean? Echidomi, papa. And those are organic transmission. The Zohar is the exact same thing. The Zohar, there are a few parts of it which are, and he says this, okay?
So how do we know which is the original and which is the addition, and how reliable is the addition? In the Gemara, it's clear.
So therefore, let me tell you something. It's very important to know. Mishnah Brura says that whenever there's a contradiction between the Zohar and Halakha, who do we follow? We always follow Halakha. So the reliability is because it can discern. That's the reality of it. So if that's why, but experiential people, they know how to discern. And by the way, the language allows you to discern. There are so many issues that allows you to take care of it. So that's interesting. But let's continue. Okay? So he says, okay. So he says that clearly, anybody who does not believe in Kabbalah because of mysticism, that's the source of the Torah. He is a person who is chayev nidui. He is a person who does not appreciate Kabbalah. You cannot take it away. It's part of the Jewish tradition. Okay, Ayin Sham. Now he says like this, Validea Sogas Mainsibracious, or Mainsimirkova, Bederach HaMekubal. And therefore, if a person is able to achieve and to experience Mainsi Merkova and Mainsi Bereshis, who are Yashirue Bein Sichli, this is to see it through his understanding. She'ein Achrav Beshuken. This is the ultimate form of evidence. The ultimate form of evidence is experience, which is to see through understanding. It's not to see in the physical sense, and it's not to feel it, but to see it through understanding. And we're going to see exactly what it means. Ki'ilu ro'e bechush. You should know that the level a person has to attain is to see something as if it was through a physical eye, but that comes through understanding. The understanding that goes beyond into experience. By the way, anybody who studied quantum or studied relativity is also an understanding that in some ways gets to experience time, the elasticity of time. You could explain all kinds of formulas, or you could experience it. We'll soon see what it means. Okay, but let's go see here. It does not come through rational analysis. You have to actually bring your heart, to clear your heart to do this. These are the meditative practices. This is exactly like prophecies attained. This is a form of prophecy today. This contemplation, it's called the contemplation, is a form of prophecy that's achievable by everybody. Okay? Now, we're going to skip a little bit here just because we're in the middle of time. And maybe half a paragraph to the word, Vegama Chakira B'Inyanei Eichud Amiti. וגם החגרה בענייני ייחוד אמיתי להבדילו מאחד העובד שזכר בחובת הלוואות. זה עושה. Because to analyze and to philosophize about the unity of God, הוא החקירה בעצמו סיסבורך. To go and philosophize God's existence, also learned by saying, you cannot have a philosophy or a rational way of understanding God. That is impossible. לך קורמה למעלה. A person is not allowed to do that. So therefore, you can only experience God. You can never know or try to philosophize. ואין בזה מצוות התבוננות. There is never a mitzvah to try to understand God or to rationalize God. אלא זור השמיר המחשב עכשיו. It's just the opposite. There is a prohibition to just create imagery. וכמו שנסבר למעלה. ותכלס כל הידוע בעצבו שיבורך של הנדע. And we'll stop here. And what is the ultimate knowledge of God? And that's what he's going to say. The knowledge of God is not to know God, to understand God, to prove God, is apophatic. To know that we can't understand him. The real mystical experience is to realize how great God is. That is way beyond us. That is an experience beyond. It's like love. You can't describe love, but you could feel love. And this is exactly what you have to attain, that you realize that God is way beyond any description and any rationalization possible. And that's what he says. That's something called apophatic. It's a language, it's a negation language. כמו שכוסף גם כן הרמב״ם. And the Rambam writes the same thing also. אחר כל הסברת חקירותיו, after everything he decided, שדובר זה אין כוח בפה, לא אומרו עשה לשומו. That in the end, you can't express God, ולא בלב אדם להבינו, you can't understand, and you can't express. Okay? Now, this is what the understanding of God. So he's going to explain to Simchat the next time that knowledge of God, therefore doesn't mean a rational understanding, is an experience. And what is unique about us is that we live in two perceptions of God, and our lives is just juggling two perceptions and living through that clash between two perceptions, negotiating and creating which one is the rational God, which is the understanding, and the experiential, which is just told is beyond the rational, and how these two perceptions of God coalesce and they negotiate. And this is the growth of life. And this is what Reb Tzadok is going to explain. Reb Tzadok is going to say the mind separation is the mind separation. One is the rational understanding that leads to mystical experiences, and the other one is the mystical experience. And you'll see that the two go ahead and negotiate with each other to create our experience of God. And I told you, the goal here is that even though it appears things which are very far away from us, hopefully by then you realize that this is a life that you can lead, a life that, like Tzadok, I think there is somebody who wrote a book on Tzadok, and his name is called Living with God. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu lives with you. Tzadik b'munato yechieh. That even though you can't achieve these high levels, but in a small level of experience, this is the gift of Yiddishkeit to all of us, that not only we can, but it's actually a mitzvah to do so. Have a great week.